happens, although we do not know how much of each life's trajectory depends on genetic inheritance. And that is just a portion of the importance of shrewdly picking one's parents. In our first years, we are with our parents at bath and bedtime and most of the hours in between. Later, if we are fortunate to avoid the all-too-widespread fraying of family structure, we join our parents at the dinner table, where we learn the truth of the axiom that the family is the smallest school. One of life's great determinants is this 9-91 fact. Children from birth to age 18 spend 9% of their time in school and 91% elsewhere, mostly with family members. From this book, you will learn that Leland Vitter chose his parents well, and you will learn something astonishing. He, who did not speak a single word until he was 3, has thrived in the communications business. This is an uncommon destination for people who, as children, are located somewhere on the autism spectrum. Readers of this book also will come to understand the wonderful, amazing amalgam of ferocity and tenderness that can appear in parents who are confronted with the sobering and sometimes life-shattering news that their child has a serious disability. Leland had several. "I was," he writes, "born severely cross-eyed, almost cartoon character-like, and had surgery at 6 months to correct it. The surgery was less than completely successful, but that was the least of Leland's problems. He was," he writes, "socially lost, yet intellectually advanced. The drama of his youth was his parents' quest to find out what was wrong, and then to prevent identifying the cause of his problems from making them worse." Parents confronted with a diagnosis such as autism are often confused and fearful, for good reason. This was especially so in the 1980s and early 1990s, when the absence of scientific understanding about autism bred, with the help of the Internet, the proliferation of misunderstandings and false certitudes, and of cruel, wounding speculations about whether parental behavior, something done or not done, was a cause of autism. Permit me here a brief personal digression. In 1972, my first child, John, was born with Down syndrome. We knew his disability within 24 hours because he had some physical abnormalities that are facets of the syndrome and because genetic testing quickly confirmed the condition. There was much we could not immediately know about, other possible physical problems and the degree of John's mental disability, which can vary widely in people with Down syndrome. But at least we knew from John's first hours what we were dealing with. So we were spared the torments that Leland's parents experienced with their agonizingly drawn-out realization that something was wrong with him. It would be a long, winding road to identifying Leland's problem. Once it was identified, his parents made a decision that was unusual, bold, risky, and right. They did not want him diagnosed, even correctly, with autism. They understood that categories have consequences. In health matters, to diagnose is to label, and to label is to attach a stigma that can complicate many things, including access to treatments and to socialization processes at institutions such as school. Leland made it through school and into the upper reaches of broadcast journalism, which took him to war zones. Meanwhile, in the United States, health policy was becoming a kind of war zone. The Internet is an endless melee of often truculent people belaboring one another with opinions, information, misinformation, and disinformation. For some strange reason, when something is said on the Internet, it thereby acquires momentum for respect by many people who should keep their skepticism unsheathed. Credulousness and misplaced confidence does not much matter if the subject is the best ingredients for macaroni and cheese. Hint: start and pretty much end with macaroni and cheese, or in arguments for and against baseball's designated hitter. When, however, the subject is even more important than baseball, when it concerns a serious health condition, the Internet can become a serious subtraction from understanding. In the 1950s, when television was in its infancy, a wit who was unenthralled with the new device said that television enabled you to have in your living room people you probably would not want to have in your living room. Today, the Internet enables millions to read and see things they would be better off not reading or seeing. And the Internet fills people with an often spurious confidence in their understanding of a subject. It was because of the Internet that during a